And next up, according to my list, I want to introduce Jeff Tom, Stephanie Watts, and Regina Brink to give us the governmental affairs report. Take it away, guys.
Thank you, Lisa. So before we get into the report, I want to give a nod to our whole committee, who I won't name because there's a pretty big committee, and to the legislative liaisons to the chapters. You all do a really great job of keeping people informed and doing a number of other things. So I want just a shout out to all of you. This is going to be, in one extremely important respect, the best governmental report, affairs report I've ever given. And the reason for that is that I'm able to share it with two incredibly gifted individuals who have been working with me this year. And I couldn't be happier to have that happen. Stephanie Watts, who I've known for several decades and who lives in Sacramento, and Regina Brink, who is my chapter president, the IDC president, and these two women have been taking on more and more of a leadership role in governmental affairs, making my job easier, giving me a little more of a chance to focus on senior advocacy. And I just want to give a real shout out to them. And for that, I'm going to turn it over first to Regina.
Thank you, Jeff. And I want to thank you for being a good role model, a wonderful leader, very approachable, even when we disagree passionately. You have been a great help and mentor to me. So I want to thank you. So I'm going to take care of or start off with the SSI-SSP advocacy that's been going on. The pandemic has been a wake-up call for our state, emphasizing the gaps in many services and the realization that those on SSI, the working poor and low-income populations, encounter the most severe effects. The SSI Coalition, and CCB is a member of that, has worked to make sure the health guidelines protect all people with disabilities when evaluating treatment for COVID-19 and access to vaccines. There's a lot more to do along the way, and some in the state have found significant barriers. Many counties in the state have been responsive, but we will use this as a way to continue to advocate for better health care in all California counties. The Golden State Stimulus, it has been approved and for people on SSI. The disconnect is between SSI and the Social Security Administration. That might come as a shock to some of you. SB 86 was a bill that addressed the difficulties on the state side, but we're not sure what's actually happening on the federal side. So California has a plan A for issuing the stimulus of $600 by direct deposit with Social Security Administration, but they also have a plan B, and they'll issue that through the state controller's office, either by a paper check or an electronic card. So governmental affairs will make sure you know as soon as we do what's happening. And we have requested some kind of tactile identifier if it is sent through the mail. And I'll keep pushing that in our meetings. We are currently advocating to restore the cuts made 11 years ago that reduced benefits by 10% or $80, and they were never restored, and to advocate for a meaningful cost of living from the state to mitigate the actual cost of living in California. So making sure the counties are keeping up with the state rules so people aren't mistakenly cut off benefits, and then to make sure the application process is more accessible to SSI recipients or potential recipients, and there's an idea to ask the state to provide representation to get people through the process. It's something the state has done and can do. And we also want the state to clarify the rules, because right now the stimulus checks from the federal government or the state will not count against you in the month you get them as income, but they might count against you as a resource. So if and when you get them, make sure to currently spend down below the $2,000 limit allowed in the bank. People have been cut off for having over that amount. So we want to change this so they are exempted, as our fire and other disaster relief programs. The good news is we have a very receptive chair in the Budget and Finance Committee right now. Her name is Nancy Skinner in the Senate, and she has been a valuable ally. There'll be an opportunity to share personal stories from SSI recipients, and it's really important when we advocate in front of the legislature. We'll make every opportunity to make it accessible for you. Those without computers will definitely make sure your stories can be heard. It's going to be very important in our future advocacy. And I'll turn it back over to you, Jeff.
Okay, I'm going to introduce Stephanie to talk about the legislative seminar.
Stephanie, you need to unmute.
Am I unmuted now?
Now you're good.
There you are.
Thank you. Okay. Well, that's one way to stop me from talking, because when I start, I sometimes don't stop. Good evening, everyone. And thank you, Jeff, for your kind words. I'm pleased and privileged to serve on the Governmental Affairs Committee alongside Jeff and Regina. I've learned a lot from both of them this past year. And hopefully I will continue to be of value to you. And so tonight I'm going to just bring you briefly some information about our governmental affairs Hill visits, legislative imperatives, and the low-cost broadband options and what that actually means. And so we had three legislative imperatives. And the order that they are listed in, I'm taking the order that was given to us back in February by ACB. So the first is securing independence for seniors and Medicare beneficiaries. This imperative calls on Congress to reintroduce the Medicare demonstration of coverage for low vision devices act, which would measure the various costs and benefits of removing the Medicare eyeglass exclusion. And this is, I'm pleased to say, was bipartisan legislation. And, you know, ideally, it's a good approach to finding workable solutions that help seniors age in place. And that's very important. Imperative number two, this is known as the Disability Access to Transportation Act, aka the DATA Act. And so, among other things, this particular act calls for the reintroduction of inclusion of the DATA Act. The DATA Act would provide greater flexibility in paratransit services to increase the independence and economic opportunities of disabled passengers. They would also increase accessibility for pedestrian infrastructure, kind of alluding back to something that was said earlier about audible signals, and of course, modernize the U.S. Department of Transportation complaint process for consumers with disabilities. That in itself is probably another panel discussion elsewhere. So I'm pleased to say there is an update on the data. On March 10th of this year, Representatives Jim Langevin and Dina Titus reintroduced the act, and it is now, for those who wish to track it, it is now known as H.R. 1697, again, H.R. 1697 in Congress. The bill was originally introduced in the 116th Congress last year in the House. Introduced in by Congress and included in House Surface Transportation legislation in July in 2020. So I believe our hard work is paying off, and I'm again pleased to report that there's some movement on that. And the last imperative is a personal near and dear to me. It is imperative number 3, which is the Exercise and Fitness for All Act. This imperative, again, calls for the reintroduction of the act, and it would require exercise and fitness facilities to provide a base level, you know, of access for those of us with disabilities. And not just access, but access to both access to equipment as well as programs. So it's one thing to just be able to say that equipment is Braille. It's another thing to say we can actually access the programs. And so that concludes the 3 imperatives. And now on to the Hill Visit Report. So this year here in California, obviously, we had virtual visits that took place over a 3-day period between February 24th and 26th. There maybe were some teams that met with Congress members after that, but the actual legislative seminar was a few days, and then the planned visits were 24th through 26th. So here in California, again, we have the largest delegation, I believe. Jeff, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think we have 55 Congress members. We have 16 teams comprised of 33 CCB members in our delegation that were assigned to cover our Congress. With few exceptions, all the teams were able to meet with the Congress members. That was a little bit different in terms of a challenge this year due to scheduling. We had to adjust on the fly, but I'm pleased to say that our teams were able, for the most part, to meet with their Congress members. Again, I'm pleased to say this year marks the highest number of CCB members participating in the annual event. Now, you know, people might say, well, I mean, highest number of people participated virtually, but I want to highlight the highest number because the mere fact that we had to participate virtually opened it up to a lot of individuals across the state. So thank you and kudos to you out there who did participate. I apologize for not having your names handy to read them off individually, but you know who you are, and we're pleased to have served alongside you. And finally, I will touch briefly on what is known as the low-cost broadband initiative. What is it and how do you access it? Well, here in California, nationwide, this resulted out of a need for providing internet services to individuals who are disabled, as well as those who can't afford the internet. So obviously, we are, those of us in this organization who are blind or low vision, meet one prong of that, and maybe two. Maybe you just can't afford it for various reasons. So here in California, the California Foundation for Independent Living Centers, CFILC, they created the Digital Access Project, known as DAP. And so they manage the program, the Digital Access Project, rather. The project, essentially, in a nutshell, is prepared to assist those who are eligible with getting internet service. And the three primary internet services providers that we are familiar with are Comcast, AT&T, and Cox. Cox is down in Southern California. There may be others, but those are the three that are most prominent. And so, again, the main point of all of this is to enable us, those of us who are eligible, to receive assistance with getting access to the internet. And I emphasize that in closing to say that you might know you're in an area served by Comcast or AT&T, for example. But the counsel here is to reach out to CFILC. And the reason being is they know and they are very well aware of the best strategies for helping you get your internet service. So again, I emphasize, please do reach out to them. The CFILC number to call is 800-390-2699. Again, 800-390-2699. You call them and you just let them know, hey, I'm interested in low-cost broadband, low-cost internet service. They'll know exactly what you're talking about and forward your call on to the appropriate individuals. And there is a website for those who wish to take this information down. The website address is www.digitalaccessproject, all together, lowercase, digitalaccessproject.org. And you can go on the site, read about the project, actually fill out a form, and that will track you into the individuals at CFILC who will respond to you. Or, of course, you can call the number one more time, 800-390-2699. And thank you again. I'm just pleased to be here this evening and to give you this report. And again, thank you so much.
Thank you, Stephanie, for that very comprehensive report. So I'm going to go over a few of the bills. I'll do our CCB bill last. So let me go over some bills that we have that we either are supporting this year or opposing in the state legislature. AB 468 is a bill that is sponsored by Guide Dogs for the Blind. I happen to have a Guide Dogs for the Blind shirt on, by the way, at the moment, which all my fellow cane users can, you know, virtually have a thumbs down if they like, but I know my wife is happy about it. And this is a bill that these two organizations have sponsored, AB 468. It would put various restrictions on what sellers of emotional support animals and emotional support paraphernalia could say and do with respect to, you know, talking about their animals as service animals, because they want to make sure that people know what they are and what they are not, and they are not service animals. It would also put restrictions on certificates that are issued by medical professionals to folks that are applying for these certificates. They couldn't just, you know, automatically send out the certificate to anybody who asked for one. Unfortunately, California being a state that tends to frown on enacting crimes oftentimes, The criminal provisions were taken out after the ACLU opposed the bill, but you can't have everything. However, the bill is moving along, and we are certainly along with GDI supporting it. I did that wrong. Sorry, Alice. Golden State Guide Dog Handlers, Inc., Incorporated. So anyway, okay, AB 580 is a bill that would have potentially removed all of the members with vision loss and other disabilities from various disaster assistance advisory committees and replaced them with individuals from other low-income populations. But CCB, along with the Association of State Employees, we got together and went to the author and said, hey, we understand your need to put other low-income folks on here, but we don't want to see our folks taken off. So we got amendments to say that we would still have a majority of people with disabilities, including people with vision loss, on these committees. And so we've taken away our opposition. SB 692 was a bill that had a education bill, special education funding priority, that would have had a set a funding priority for kids being in class at least 80% of the day. And that priority could have jeopardized funding not only for, blind kids in general, but specifically it would have reduced the incentive to send kids to CSB that needed it. And so our community and the deaf community got together, including representatives from, the special education community, NFB, and ourselves. And we got amendments that basically remove our opposition and don't jeopardize our funding. That bill is so complicated now, I don't know what in the world it does, but, people in education have their own, jargon that I totally don't understand. And maybe I don't want to ever understand it. But anyway, it doesn't hurt us anymore, and that's the only thing that matters. So finally, let me get to AB 371. And that is a CCB-sponsored bill. We all know the problems that electronic scooters and similar e-devices present. People, colliding with them, people falling over them when the renters of these vehicles leave them in the sidewalk. So we introduced a bill that did two things, one of which no one's objected to, and that is to have Braille and tactile signage so we can identify the scooter company to which it has been rented if we fall over one. But the second one the industry absolutely hates, and that is there's currently insurance that they have to have on these vehicles starting in January of 22, but the insurance would not apply even to negligence to a pedestrian. It would apply in certain situations to the user, the operator of the scooter, but not to us. The industry is adamantly against it. They don't want to work with us. We have taken amendments once and we're now taking more amendments. We've found first they said, well, there's no insurers that will ever do this. So how do you expect us to do it? Well, now, apparently, just this week, this is something that just came out today, interestingly enough. They have found insurers in out of state, I believe, who will write this type of insurance, which will even make the industry more of a laughing stock. And so we're taking more amendments to make sure that this insurance will get written. And we are going to delay the insurance by 6 months because it's going to take an additional 6 months time to get all the pieces in place. You can't have everything 100%. But I have to tell you, in our first hearing we had, the legislators were like telling us, you need to work with the opposition. You got to really reach out. In our second hearing, they were like, to the industry, you guys aren't doing anything. And if you don't get your act together, then it's going to be all on you. So there was a total shift among, and even the Republicans who had abstained the first time came around and voted for us the second time. So I think we're moving along really well. I want to, you know, urge people when they see a hearing advertised to get on and support us. We shouldn't have any problems getting through the assembly, but then we have to move over to the Senate. So the battle is not won yet. We can use any stories that people have. And this is really a precedent-setting piece of legislation, insurance that scooters companies will have to have that will result in coverage when the negligence of the, not only the potentially of the company, but even more importantly and more likely of the operator of the scooter who, you know, goes out and gets drunk and leaves the thing in the middle of the sidewalk, or just doesn't care and leaves it in the middle of the sidewalk. So, you know, we need your help, but we're going to get it done, and the rest of the country may hopefully can follow suit. So with that, we're going to finish tonight's report with a little bit of a summary on the Medi-Cal program. And to start, I'm going to turn it over to Regina.
Thank you, Jeff. I'll try to make this brief. Open enrollment for Medi-Cal is now year-round. You can enroll in or change health plans all year round. So people with dual plus, and that means you have Medicare and Medi-Cal, can enroll for the first three quarters of the year under a special enrollment provision. So that's an increase. California is increasing its Medi-Cal income eligibility limits to 138% of the federal poverty level. So what this means is, for an individual, it's going from $1,294 to $1,468. And for a couple, it's moving from $1,747 to $1,983. And that hope will catch more people. People are currently receiving Medi-Cal who have a share of costs may now be eligible for free Medi-Cal. And the California Department of Healthcare Services sent a letter to people who may be qualified for that. So if you didn't get one, contact a caseworker and ask about it. Additionally, California will stop flipping Medi-Cal recipients between free and share of cost Medi-Cal based on who is paying the Medicare Part B premium. This problem has existed for a long time, and it can cause significant disruptions in healthcare. So the new rule will allow the county welfare departments to deduct the same amount as the Part B premium, regardless of whether the recipient is currently paying it or the state is paying it as a benefit of free Medi-Cal. So some recipients may still have to pay an initial premium or an ongoing premium, depending on their situation in Part B. However, once a person is eligible for Medi-Cal, the person will continue to be eligible for free Medi-Cal. It may take some time for counties to redetermine eligibility based on these rules. All changes should be retroactive to December 1st, 2020, if the person is found eligible. Okay, back to you, Jeff.
Okay, so thank you. I'm going to end with just a little discussion of what has become a definite passion for me, because I'm old, and that is services for all adults, really, but primarily seniors, because that's who most people are with vision loss, seniors with vision loss, and Medi-Cal. They're currently not covered except in rare instances such as occupational therapy. The whole array of vision rehabilitation services, which is covered by that slim amount of money that the Older Individuals Who Are Blind program represents, needs to be covered under Medi-Cal. And this has been a real fight that CCB has taken on. We are not getting as far as we need to get. We need more voices among the advocates. We especially need more voices among the provider community that has more resources. And I am somewhat cynical about this administration's willingness to, move the ball along. But I came across another opportunity, which I've sent out to this list, to a couple of our lists, and I hope people will try and take advantage of it. And if they want to do so, just contact me. Next Monday and Thursday, there are going to be hearings on this state's Older Americans Act plan and for the next few years. This gives us another opportunity to emphasize the need for more services to low-income Californians with vision loss, like technology training and orientation and mobility and peer support and daily living skills. I could go on and on. So if you're interested in testifying or submitting comments, talk to me about it. As soon as this convention's over, I'm going to be studying what I need to do in order to make those comments next week on myself. But, one person's comments are really unimportant, but 100 people commenting can really make a difference. So with that, I want to again thank Regina and Stephanie for all their hard work and for challenging me, because that's what keeps me fresh and younger and better, and for the great job they're doing. And I want to thank all of you for giving the input that you do on all of what CCB is trying to do. So I think I don't even know if we have any time for questions. I think we're about out, but I'll leave it up to Lisa.
I think we are already past our time. So why don't we move on, and maybe right before we end, if we have time for questions, we can open it back up. Are you good with that, Jeff?
Sure.
So that was a very informational report. Thank you so much, Jeff, Stephanie, and Regina. Now I want to introduce a message from our silver sponsor, Democracy Live.
Hello, my name is Brian Finney. I'm president of Democracy Live. I want to thank the California Council of the Blind to allow us to help support the Council of the Blind virtual convention in 2021. Democracy Live is the leading provider of accessible at-home voting technologies and accessible online technologies throughout the state of California and serving 25 other states throughout the country. If you want to get a hold of Democracy Live, feel free to reach out to us at democracylive.com or info@democracylive.com. We look forward to sponsoring your convention, and we hope you enjoy the 21 convention.
Thank you, Democracy Live.